It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they develop to move forward and live their best lives. I'm Jenny Taylor.
And I'm Michelle Scharf. Jenny, a couple weeks ago, I went to this amazing event called the Limitless Society. And while I was there, I heard inspiring stories from a lot of different people. But I met this one guy, and I'd heard just parts of his story while he was speaking to the group. And I approached him afterwards, and I'm like, I'd like to hear more of your story. Because you know me, I want to hear everybody's story, right? And he started sharing with me kind of the bigger picture of his story, and I was just shocked. You know what was crazy, though, is I come back and I tell you, I know this guy, and you're like, wait a minute.
I know this guy. What a
small
world.
So how do you know him?
So I know Ben Moa and his wife because they help run an athletic facility up near my home where my boys train and a bunch of other young athletes. They call it Tip Top Athlete, and it's speed and agility and conditioning and character building and all of the above. And it came highly referred to us, all the athletic families we know at home in North Ogden. And I also know he works in the real estate industry up close to home. So I don't know him super personally, but I'm like, I know Ben Moa.
I come back and I start telling you bits and pieces of the story, and you're like, wait, what? And I'm like, I've got to get these people on, and you've got to hear the whole story from them.
It just goes to show that you can know somebody without really knowing somebody.
Absolutely. We don't really know the trials, the struggles our neighbors have been through.
And that's what this show is all about.
Absolutely. And we don't understand, like, what is the motivation behind the great things that are being done in our community.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it was from making bad choices as a kid or doing some things that didn't work out or loving some people that struggled in other ways, you know?
Sure, absolutely.
So I'm excited. Today we have Ben Moa and his wife, Christina. Christina is a beautiful woman. I was just taken. She's gorgeous. And Ben Moa used to play football for the U of U. He's played for Miami Dolphins, New York Giants, the Las Vegas Gladiators, and he also has done MMA. So he's kind of a badass. Are we allowed to say it on KSL podcast? We're going to today.
We're
going to
find out when this airs if that's still there or not.
We're going to say it today because he really is a cool guy. And I cannot believe the trials and struggles that got him to where he is today. And it's an inspiring story. So with that, welcome Ben Moa.
Hello, hello. Thanks for the opportunity to speak today.
You're welcome. I'm so excited. And I'm really excited to hear from Christina as well. She is a big part of your story, right?
She's a huge part. She is the main part of my story.
I love that. Well, Christina, welcome to our show.
Thank you. We're excited to be part of it.
I think that we're going to have fun today. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about both of you? Each take a few minutes, however you want to do it. And then, okay. Christina, I know that you're going to get started with the story, and then Ben's going to highlight and fill us in on some things. But however you guys want to approach it.
Okay, yeah. So Ben and I, we met when we were 18 at the University of Utah. We were both attending school there. I happened to move into the dorms in January. So after he had already been there for a whole semester. And the roommate that I got in the dorms just said, hey, do you want to go meet some football players? And I was like, okay. I grew up watching football. My brother played at BYU. So I was very familiar with those type of, you know, athletics and sports. So I was comfortable to go and meet some guys and hang out. And so when we walked across the way to where the old dorms were, and the guy that opened the door was Ben, and he had this big smile on his face and was like, hi, I'm Ben. And I was like, this guy is so happy. He's so happy. And really, ever since then, we just kind of stayed together. We 7 months later, we were married and off it went.
So that's young and that's fast.
Yes, it was young and fast.
Okay, so just that love at first sight, here we go.
Yep, here we go. While we were dating, we were getting to know each other, and I asked the normal questions, I guess, like, where are you from, who's your family, normal questions, I think, to get to know other people. And he tells me, he says, I play football at the University of Utah, but, I'm a gang member. I used to be a gang member. In my mind, I was like, why is he telling me this? Like, you don't have to impress me. And gang members don't get scholarships to big colleges.
The gang history was high school. This was pre-college. So young.
Yeah. Super young.
It was before high school.
Yes.
We'll come back to that.
So this is just my point of view, I guess I should say first. This is all I knew. This is the first time I ever heard of a gang member. I'm like, well, gang member, gang members don't go to college, which was very naive, first of all. And I just liked him. And so I didn't think anything of it. He never showed me, to me, gang movies, that was not Ben. So I just thought, oh, we must be like a family member, and maybe he's including himself in that.
He didn't have a bandana hanging out of his back pocket and pants,
all the cliches.
Yeah, exactly. Like carrying knives or something. I don't know. Yeah. It was in my 18-year-old mind, but it definitely wasn't what I saw or what I felt. So I just knew that I liked him, and we fell in love, and we got married. I didn't really know much more about that. So if Ben wants to talk to you about, I guess, how he got to that point in life, I guess that would be great. How he got to the University of Utah.
Before we get to that, Christina, so you're from Modesto. I'm from Sacramento. Those areas have a lot of gang members. And you do, even 20, 30 years ago, I don't know how much younger you guys are than me. I don't have a reference, but...
We're 41.
Okay, so you're about 12 years younger than me. 30 years ago when I was in California, there were some rough characters, and they typically had their pants down to their ankles, and they either had a red or blue bandana out their back pocket, and they did have guns and knives on them.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
and I grew up in a very open family. Like, my parents didn't shelter me, and I had friends of all different types of walks. I was very involved in the school. I don't know. It just wasn't in my mind. I wasn't sheltered, so I knew in a way, but it just wasn't what fit in my mind with what Ben told me, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, I totally get that. So, Ben, tell us, when did this all begin?
Okay, so I'll rewind to the beginning of my story, how I got to the University of Utah. Okay? So
yep.
I am from Southern California. So I was born in San Bernardino, California, raised in Rancho Cucamonga.
Oh,
in gangs, drugs, violence, all that stuff. Tell them, baby. Tell them.
You want me to tell it, or?
Yeah, and then I'll chime in.
Okay. So what I know, Ben, this is what I've heard, obviously, is that he grew up in Southern California. He was raised by his mother. He's the youngest of three. He does not remember his dad. Supposedly about two or three, he's been told, is the last time he saw his dad. Ben, his nationality is half Black, half Tongan. His mother is Tongan.
And I was raised by my Tongan side.
Yes, so he was raised by his mom. And then most of his childhood, Ben, tell me if I'm wrong, but you lived with your grandfather.
I lived with my grandpa, yeah. My mom was always working.
Your mom's dad.
With my mom's dad, which is Tongan. His native tongue is Tongan. Doesn't speak a ton of English, but made his way here. We were always raised in the church. He went on a mission to Hawaii for, I think, 6 years, my grandpa. And he was responsible for bringing a lot of the Tongan people here from the islands in the early 50s, I think, or something like that.
Oh, very cool.
So he's really stoked for the LDS church and the Tongan people coming here. So we were always go to church. He'd always make us go to church and do all this stuff. But this was in California, right? So he was working all the time, and my mom was working all the time, and all my uncles were in, it's called the Tongan Crip Gang, and they ran around, with a huge influence from the LA gangs and started to do their own thing. So the people I looked up to were my brothers and my cousins and my uncles, and they were all in gangs and heavily in gangs and mafia stuff. So when I was a kid, my goal was to be the best gang member I could be. And that's because that's all I was around me. And that's kind of a classic product of your environment, Dale. So I started fighting everyone or fighting anyone that wasn't a part of our gang. And I would always fight, and we had guns. We shot at people. We did.
And you're
all
how
kinds
old?
Of crazy stuff.
You're how old in all of this?
It was probably from 9 to 11.
Okay, that blows my mind, Ben, because I have a 9-year-old. I have a 11-year-old.
Exactly.
They like Nerf guns. They like water guns. They like to play with their friends and cousins. I can't imagine them being in an environment where it's a real gun, real danger, real drugs, real violence.
I really skipped that childhood part of my life.
Yeah.
I had to grow up really quick because when I was
in the
really
midst of
young,
this, do you go to school? Like, are you showing up to school 9 to 3 on a regular day?
No. So funny part is I went to elementary, but I didn't go to the end of elementary and any of junior high.
Wow.
So from 12 to 16, I was locked up at Mill Creek Youth Center on 12th Street in Ogden.
Yeah. I know it because as a youth in my church, we used to go visit and learn basically how to avoid any.
Sure,
I mean, honestly, really, they took us there to do some service. But for all of us from outside that lifestyle, it felt like, it's kind of like Christina said, it felt like what you'd seen in the movies. Like, I grew up in Ogden, Utah, and I didn't grow up in gangs. I didn't grow up in that kind of violence and that kind of atmosphere. It felt so foreign. And yet this is really all you had known your whole childhood.
So we come from California to Utah for a reunion. I ended up getting into a gang fight and ended up shooting someone in the leg, in the waist area. And I got locked up at Mill Creek Youth Center for 4 years, 12 to 16. So really, I didn't go to junior high. I didn't go to end of elementary. And then, so I met a lot of good Polynesian men that were there, and they were teaching me basically that this is not what you want to do. You don't want to be in gangs. You don't want to be this. It's not normal to be selling drugs at this age. It's not a normal thing. So once I realized that, I kind of started working towards, hey, I like making these people happy, and I like being a good person, because I've always felt like I wasn't like my brothers or my cousins. I didn't want to do that, but I didn't know anything else. So I didn't have anything to compare it to. So I just assumed, I might as well just be a gangster. But now I have something to compare it to. And it's like, that's not normal. That's not okay. That's not what everyone else is doing in the world. I need to change it. So then the counselors in Mill Creek Youth Center were helping me just become a man. So basically I trained, we basically worked out, we did packets for school, and we did a lot of treatment type things to kind of open your mind, therapy type stuff. Mm-hmm. Open your mind, unlock your mind. This is not you. Who do you want to be?
Were you using drugs at that point?
In Mill Creek?
Well, not in Mill Creek, but before you got there.
Before, I used every drug you can imagine.
Oh, I mean, you're just a kid.
Peanut butter crank, weed, crystal meth, cocaine, everything. We were selling all this stuff. So the only way to make you not nervous when you're selling this stuff to people and they've got guns and they're shooting is to do the drug and feel powerful.
Wow.
As a kid.
So
it's
then
so
I imagine
scary. It's so scary. It's so
in Mill
scary
Creek,
when you go.
You're cut off from access to that.
Right.
Yeah,
do you go through massive withdrawal and shock and things?
That comes with all that stuff. Like, it's a detox period when you go into Mill Creek. You usually don't go. So Mill Creek is a secure facility. It's basically like a kid prison. So if you don't know how the systems work, it's you go to jail before you go to prison. And jail is like your holding take. And if you are a career criminal, you go to a secure facility. So detention centers are where kids go to detox, and then they get placed into these other places.
Right.
Wow.
So I was in Salt Lake Detention Center for months, and then I got transferred to a secure facility. The only reason I got transferred from Salt Lake to – I was supposed to go to Decker Lake in Salt Lake, but I got transferred to Ogden because the counselor – go ahead.
Yeah. So being – obviously being married to Ben for so long, like, and looking back – not just on his life before me, but also on with his life with me, there's been so many different, literally miracles, blessings, whatever people want to call it. We see it as a blessing and literally a miracle. Some people may just call it luck. This is like one of the first things that really was a huge miracle to Ben was when he got in trouble and he was 12. I guess he was like on a high speed chase with the cops because he shot somebody. Then he stole a car and the cops are chasing him. And so they end up, when they arrest him, they want to charge him.
We crashed into the bee stadium.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I'm learning something new too today, guys.
Oh my goodness. So here you are, you're 12 years old. You've shot somebody. You are in a high speed chase. You're probably on drugs at the time. You stole a car. You're 12 years old in a high speed chase with a stolen vehicle and you crash into the bee stadium.
Yep. And then in my defense, the guy shot my cousin in the face first.
Oh, wow.
So I actually got self-defense.
Wow.
They did want to charge him as an adult, though, right, Ben?
Yeah, they wanted to certify me as an adult and send me to prison. But my lawyer got me the self-defense thing because they shot us first. And so then I had to stay in 4 years for all the stuff that I had on me, the drugs, the guns.
You're there from 12 to 16. What happens at 16? Do you go back to the gang life? Do you go back to a high school setting? What happens next?
This is another tender mercy that happens. One of the counselors in Mill Creek Youth Center, his name is Uncle Mace. He's not my uncle, but he's my uncle forever now. He ended up, because my option was to go back to California or to go to Salt Lake where the gang is, my other gang is. My family moved, everybody moved from Southern California up here, and they moved to Glendale, Utah. So Salt Lake City, downtown, wow, on the west side. So everybody's here now. So my option was to go to Salt Lake and live with my mom in Glendale or to go back to California. I didn't have another option. So Uncle Mace was like, okay, I'll take you in as a foster kid.
Oh my gosh.
And this big thing happened where the Mill Creek was like, no, you can't take him in as a foster kid. That's a conflict of interest. And then so Uncle Mace said, okay, I'll quit.
Wow.
So he quit Mill Creek and took me in as a foster kid. And I'll never.
That's your turning point.
Yeah. Well,
that's where I turned.
We don't know. Hold on. We got to take a break.
Yes.
We're going to take a break. Let everybody try to catch up to where we are. We'll be right back and find out what happens at next.
16.
Oh my gosh, that's still so young. We'll be right back.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Okay, Ben, so you're 16. You're now released from the youth center, Mill Creek. You've got this, sounds like, wonderful uncle-like figure in your life offering you a second chance and opportunity. Continue with the story.
So he takes me in as a foster kid, and actually they create a group home because I guess the foster thing wasn't going to work. So they created a group home called Triumph Youth Center, and I ended up being the first kid in Triumph Youth Center. So, I mean, there's a bunch of people to thank that are in that thing. It was my Uncle Mace, Miller, Atagi, Kenyatta Green. There's a lot of people that so many people that basically kind of remolded me, and they seen something in me that I didn't see in myself. So many people to thank. And basically all those guys, they quit Mill Creek, right? One guy quit Mill Creek, started a group home and kept me there. And then all the coaches were recruiting me. They would come in to Mill Creek Youth Center. The basketball coach at Ogden High, his name is Coach Wilcox, and then another coach called Coach Colburn, they would come and watch me play against the adults because I was kind of mature. Like, I already thought I was a man because of all the stuff I've been through. So I've always played up or did stuff up. So they would bring in people from Utah State to play basketball against me, and I would just destroy them. It was pretty funny. Or in football, they'd bring in teams to, and then the coaches would come watch me. So then everybody that was at Mill Creek on the staff went over to Ogden High, and they took over that staff to help me, and they all coached me there.
That's amazing. So you started to find some footing through athletics, really. I mean, this athletic ability you had kind of gave you some standout attention where they thought, hey, this kid's got promise. Let's channel it that way.
Well, and not only obviously these men really saw the potential of Ben, and they really believed in him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, quitting your job and starting something different so that you could help this kid.
To help him find
a better
path. That's
crazy. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. So that happened, and then it was like switched my mind from wanting to be a gangster to wanting to be the best athlete I could be, to make everybody happy, to please everybody. So I put all my focus into that, and then, I just wanted to be the best athlete. But I'm still, remember, take into consideration, I'm still the kid I was, right?
Right.
So I have a Band-Aid on, and I know this is right, but I'm wired wrong. I'm wired totally incorrectly.
Right.
I'm wired to steal. I'm wired to cheat. I'm wired to beat up people.
So how was that in the high school environment? Did you do okay in your class environment, the academic side of school, where you hadn't really been used to going to junior high or even upper elementary?
No, I was fine in school. For grades-wise, it kind of master manipulated my way through everything because that's what you learn to become when you're doing, when you're in.
Oh, yeah. Addicts and criminals, they're great charmers.
I didn't realize all this stuff until, a lot of counseling and talking to people of what I was and why I was doing things. But that's what I was. I was a master manipulator. Even into my relationship, I didn't know, there's so much stuff. I'll let my wife touch on all that stuff, though. Christina?
Where should we
go? Where I want to know, Christina, where in all of this did you find Ben? So we know he got out of the Mill Creek at 16. You two met at 18. So somewhere there was a couple years of fairly standard going to school. And then it sounds like you did well enough in the athletic program in high school that you ended
up recruited
to the U. And then
but I was still doing stealing. I was still cheating.
At one point in high school, he got in trouble again, right, Ben? And he actually got put back in detention center.
Oh, really?
It was for...
Back to Mill Creek? Back to the same?
No, I went to Weber Valley.
Okay.
It's a holding. It's like a jail. Holding.
But they let you still play football in and out of that?
So they let me play football. So I had an ankle monitor on.
Wow.
I had an ankle monitor on when I got in trouble, and I was track season. And so I took state in shot put and discus. With the ankle monitor on. And I've never thrown a discus or a shot put in my life. But Coach Filianga, who was a football coach, really believed in me and said I would do great at it. So then I just gave him everything I had, and I did exactly what he told me to do. And I took state and shot put and discus back to back. So it was my junior and senior year.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so I have all those little medals. So it's pretty cool. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, let's talk a bit about once you two meet. So you meet at the University of Utah. Ben, it's been mentioned that you're half Tongan, half black. Christina's half white, half Mexican. Did I get that right? And you meet at the U as young kids, but Ben's got a huge history as a young kid on that University of Utah football team. Christina, was that just kind of okay with you? Could you see potential in him that you weren't worried about or afraid of that past? Because I'll be honest, if this were my daughter going away as a freshman to school, and she calls and says, "Hey, Mom, I met this guy.
Home and locking her up.
And he won he won the state record, but he had an ankle bracelet because, let's be real, that isn't your typical love story. You're like, hey, found the perfect guy. Clearly, you knew Ben had more to him than what his upbringing had offered him. Can you walk us through the relationship side of that? I mean, the resilience of choosing to build a relationship with someone that had that kind of record, for lack of a better word. Most of us would just say, heck no, stay away. That's too risky. So I'm really curious on the personal side of things.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, I really was living this La La Land. I don't even know like where my mind was at 18, but I was just enjoyed Ben. I enjoyed his positive attitude, his happy smile, his inclusiveness for other people, very aware of.
I have to admit, I mean, I'm sure you saw what I saw in him that Saturday when I met you guys. I mean, he has an engaging smile, and there's something about Ben that is just endearing, I think is a good word.
And inviting, like she said, you've got a way to set people at ease around you, which, again, does not fit that stereotype of the gang guy.
No.
You know, I'm not scared of him and intimidated by him. I feel welcome and eager talk with him.
Yeah, I never felt any kind of anything from him, like threatening. Like while we were dating, I went home one first spring break during when I was at the U, and I asked him the night before, I was leaving on Saturday, it was Friday. I said, hey, do you want to drive to California with me for spring break? And he was like, sure. And I said, okay. And so we drove across Nevada, and he came and met my family. And if they also fell in love with him, his, you know, the same thing. Like my parents, they didn't say like, you know, we have this really weird feeling about him, or him and my younger brother, they got along so well. There's six of us in my family. I'm the fifth. So I have a lot of older siblings. They all loved Ben. And that was really important to me, obviously, my family is. So when they met him and they felt the way I did, it just was like, well, great. I'm glad everybody likes him like I do. So, yeah, he never.
So walk us through early marriage. What does life look like? How does it work? You transition into college football.
Oh,
now you're married.
You're going to find out.
We want to know what happens next. It's been 20 years since now.
So just for you guys' reference, this story that we're telling you, ESPN did a story on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to Google my name and it's on YouTube. So you guys can check it out.
Okay, maybe we can. Okay. I watched it.
No, we'll... not right now, though, but I was going to tell you.
I did watch it.
Okay.
I have not watched it,
so you got to tell me the story anyway.
Okay, I'll tell the story. So we get married in July because obviously football season's going to start in the fall and Ben needs to get back. So we get married the end of July and we head back to Utah. So this was like the first thing of my marriage, I should say. So we're driving back into college from California and Ben is driving and we get pulled over. And so going back to when Ben drove with me to spring break, I actually got pulled over and Ben got a ticket for not wearing a seatbelt. Well, Ben never paid his ticket and I didn't know that.
Oh,
I mean,
and
I
sometimes that's all it takes. A small infraction.
Oh yeah. Are you in Nevada?
Yes, we're in Nevada.
You're toast.
So he gets pulled over for speeding, and he has a warrant out for his arrest because he never paid his ticket for not wearing a seatbelt a few months prior. And so they arrest him, and I have to bail him out with my only money I think we had. So
we got the money from as a gift, a wedding gift. And
a wedding gift, and I had to use it to bail Ben out. So that was kind of like the journey, I think. They were like, hey, guess what? This is going to be the journey of your marriage for a little bit of time. So that was like the first experience of like anything. And then fast forward to about 3 weeks later, we're living in Utah. Ben is now, you know, practicing at the U. He looks promising. Obviously, they're really excited because the year prior he wasn't able to play. So this is like his first year. My mom, for some reason, happens to be in Utah with my sister. I really honestly don't know why they were here. They must have just been visiting me. So Ben was at practice, and I get a phone call from Ben's mom, and she tells me, hey, there's a wedding tonight. Can you guys come? And I've never been to a Polynesian wedding. I was like, yeah, we'll be there. And so when Ben comes home from practice, I said, Ben, we're going to go to this wedding. Your mom told us to be there. And he told me, I don't really want to go. And I was like, that's weird and that's rude. So we are going to go. So we went to this wedding. It was out, where is it, West Valley, Ben?
Yeah, I was at the Armory. But the reason I didn't want to go is because all the gang boys were there, all of them. So the boys from Inglewood came up, and they're fighting with another gang. It's called the Tongan Crip Regulators. So the Utah Tongans were fighting against the Inglewood Tongans because of a big thing that happened in California. So I didn't want to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you didn't think of saying to her, Christina, it's dangerous for me to go.
No, it's because I'm not scared of danger. So I wasn't scared. I didn't want her to go, basically. He didn't want her to go.
Were you concerned about getting involved in the gang activity? I mean, it's like once you kind of are in that life, it's hard to leave.
Because my brother was in prison. My oldest cousin was in prison. So I was kind of the person that they call it a shot caller. And I was kind of the person that kind of called the shots of what happens and who does what.
Wow. Okay.
So I didn't want to go. So, yeah.
So, well, we go to the wedding. And we get to the wedding. We're there for about, I don't know, 15 minutes. And somebody comes to Ben and tells him something in his ear. And Ben doesn't say anything to me, but he immediately gets up and starts walking, like, out of, like, where the festivities were happening, out into, like, this foyer type area. And, like, he just left. We were there. My mom, I mean, it was a beautiful wedding. My mom was enjoying it. My sister, they happened to know people. So we were having a great time. And then all of a sudden, I had this really strong feeling that I needed to leave. And so I go and find my mom, and I said, Mom, we need to leave. And she was not having it. She's like, this is so fun. Like, we're dancing. We're enjoying. Like, there's a lot of things that happen at a Polynesian wedding. And she wasn't wanting to go. And I was like, kept saying, like, Mom, I really feel like we need to go. I'm going to go get Ben. We need to leave. And so I went and found Ben, and he was sitting out with his cousins. And I said, Ben, we need to go. I want to go home. And at this point, I'm pregnant with my first son.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I say, Ben, we need to go. And he really did look at me and say, I'm not leaving. And it wasn't like I'm not leaving, like you can convince me.
Well, it wasn't like I was being mean. It was like I just told you guys, I was the head of the stuff, so I couldn't leave my – because this is what happened. I haven't told this story, not even to ESPN. So the other gang comes, and they have about 40 people. And then my gang that was already there had about 20 or 15 people. So if I were to leave at that situation, it would – like when you're in a gang, you never back down. You never run. So that's what I was taught. So there was no way I could have left.
And essentially, you're the leader of this thing.
Not the leader. I'm not the leader of the gang. I was in a position where
the director,
yeah,
the shot caller.
I couldn't leave for some reason. I just couldn't. I couldn't do that to my brothers and my little cousin.
Okay, so what happens? I've got to know. Do you leave? Do you stay? Is it safe? Do we die? Like, where does this go?
So I tell Ben. So he's like, "You just go." And so I said, "Okay," because I had this strong feeling I needed to leave. So my mom and my sister and I, we all leave. As soon as we pull out of the armory and we turn, I see this van, and I see all these boys like happening to like get into a van, and it kind of gave me like a bad feeling. And at this time, this is when they were preparing for the Olympics, so the freeway was closed at night, and you had to go down State Street. And we lived up by the U, so when we were down, you know, south, so we had to hop on State Street. And within about 5 minutes of driving down State Street, we see all these cop cars start flying by me, and immediately my mom's like, "We need to pray," and so like we say a prayer. We end up getting home, and a few minutes after being home, the phone rings because we don't have cell phones at the time. So the phone at the apartment rings, and it's Ben's mom, and she's like super calm. She's like a very high pitched voice too, like really calm, like, "Hi, Christina." And I'm like, "Hey." She's like, "Can I please talk to your mom?" And I was like, "Okay, this is like really weird, like, but you could talk to my mom." And I give the phone to my mom. Immediately, you know, whatever she tells my mom yells to me, "Christina, like, come here. We need to get to the hospital right now. Ben's been shot." And I'm like, "What? Like, what?" I can't remember knowing what to think. I just remember crying and then immediately trying to get to LDS Hospital. And we're not from Salt Lake, and LDS Hospital is not a real hot, easy hospital to find. It's kind of confusing, but we end up getting there. Well, Ben's mom is the only one there. My mom and I, my sister and I, obviously come into the emergency room. They tell me Ben's been shot in the lung. It hit his lung. We don't know any more than that. And so if Ben wants to tell you what happened at the wedding, then I can pick up from there.
All right, Ben.
We have to take a break.
But when we come back, we want to hear about what happened when Christina left and what happened at this wedding. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
we are back. Ben, we understand you've been shot, but
and
what
how
happened?
Old are you again? Remind me the age of
He's got to be, what, 19?
18. 18 or 19,
this
I got
This is
shot.
The very beginning. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
This is where Christina started.
And yet she's still here 22 or 3 years later. So I definitely need to hear more of the story.
Yeah, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. It's a crazy winding road we're going to take.
What happened?
So we get to the wedding. Remember I told you the two groups are butting heads, right?
Yeah.
So they go in and they're going to fight. So I go in and step in. The guy that was talking to me told me what was happening and how they got there. So then they come up and they want to fight. And I tell them not here. So what ends up happening is somebody comes out and was standing behind me, my little cousin, and they end up hitting him in the head with a shovel. So then at that point, it's like, well,
game on.
Here we go.
Yep.
So then we just start rumbling, and then one of their guys starts shooting. One of our guys starts shooting. I got shot in the middle of my chest, hit my bottom of my lung. Collapsed my lungs, so I start drowning on my own blood. The bullets lodged in my back. I think I got hit in the arm as well. And then another guy got hit in the leg, top of his kneecap, messed up his leg. And then after I get shot, I walk back into the chapel. Right when it hits my chest, boom, I'm just like, dang it, coach is going to be so mad at me. And we were about to play Cal, and I just grabbed my head like I'm in so much trouble from coach. Now I can't play. Like that was the only thing I was thinking about. Disappointing the coach, Coach McBride. So then I turn, walk back into the chapel, and then nobody knows what's going on, right? Because at a Polynesian wedding, it's loud, it's dancing, it's activities, it's luau, it's food. So then I get into the thing, and my grandpa sees me. I sit down next to my grandpa, and I move my hand off of my chest, and then a little stream of blood shoots out like a little faucet out of my chest. And then my grandpa just looks at me and I just look at him. And then he sticks his finger in that hole to stop the blood in my thing. And then I just kind of, boom, just lay down on the, he moves the chairs and then everybody starts screaming. So my grandpa basically stopped that blood from oozing out of my chest. And he just stuck his finger in there.
And that's when you're taken to the hospital. Yeah.
Yeah, so then they lifelight me to the hospital. And then they shoot me with this thing that paralyzes you. And then they start sticking the chest tubes into your chest to drain your lung. And when I'm in the helicopter, I'm thinking, these guys don't know I'm awake. And they're doing surgery on me. So then I start freaking out in my mind and start, like, crying. And then they slip my ribs open and start sticking tubes in my chest to drain my lung because it was drowning. And I didn't know that you're supposed to be awake. So, that's the last thing I remember. And then I blacked out.
Wow. Probably mercifully so. So, Ben and Christina, what happens? You're young. You're in this gang incident at this wedding. You're in surgery. We know you live because you're still here. Do you continue, as a University of Utah student, do you continue in that gang activity? Walk us through those college years getting into the NFL, because we got a lot of years to go from age 19 to 42.
But really quick, why was the other gang at the wedding? I've got to know.
So because we're family. We're Tongan.
We're family.
It's all family.
It's all family, but it's factions of different factions.
It's sections of different family that don't like each other because of what happened in California.
Oh, wow.
So we're all family that this is happening to. We all know each other.
So take us from that day through college, because we got to get from college to the NFL to what you're doing now. That's a lot of years. We got a lot to cover. Are there more incidents like this? Does this become a way of life? Christina, does this not push you away from Ben and say, holy cow, I'm out of here?
Yeah. So within the next, 2 months, so he gets shot. Then a few days later, he's at practice, the wounds open up, and then he has to go back to the hospital. They have to remove the bullet, and then he's attending practice again. He's on the mend. He ends up getting in trouble with the football team. He stole some money from a teammate in the locker room. Coach McBride has to kick Ben off the football team.
Well, I didn't get caught. Coach McBride.
Listen to him say that so proudly. Wait a second. I didn't get caught, guys.
No, Coach McBride asked me if I did it.
Oh,
and
interesting.
I told him I did it.
So you didn't get caught, but you were honest about it.
Yeah,
because
these people were like, oh, I didn't do it. And then Coach McBride was like, did you do this? I felt like I couldn't lie to him. So I told him I did it.
And I did it. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. I did it, you know. But there was this respect for Coach Mack that I had because he took a chance on me. He knew my whole background. He knew I was going to be a handful.
I guess so I just want to see how this college career goes with things like this. And you're not kicked off the team. You're not kicked out of the school. You are recruited by the NFL. This is a story. I really want to hear what those few early years of life and marriage look like. And Christina doesn't just run away. Like, tell us more about that.
Well, yeah. So after he got kicked off the team for stealing the money from his teammate, he came home. He told me what happened. And I was like super confused again. Like, wait, what? Why would you do that? But we did have some money in savings. And so he's like, I need to go back and pay my teammate. And I said, okay. And he went to the bank and then he didn't come home. So this was about 2 or 3 months into our marriage. And now I can't find him. And again, we don't have cell phones. Like, I can't just look up.
And you're
my
pregnant,
iPhone.
Right?
And now I know. And I guess I'm
pregnant. Oh my gosh.
With my son. I can't find him for probably about 2-3 days. And so my parents end up saying, you know what? We'll be out there tomorrow. We're coming to pick you up. You're coming back to California.
Yeah, I think I'd be that mom, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah,
or I'd want to be.
Like, yeah, my parents are amazing. So they came, they drove out to Utah. They packed what we could in the two cars. And I left. I went back to California. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, like this is what life is going to be. I'm going to be a single mom. That's going to be okay. I have my family, my parents, you know, my siblings. I have a lot of support. But that wasn't the case. Ben ends up coming out to California a few weeks later and is like, I'm done with the gang life. Like, I'm done. Like, I want to be with you. I want to be with our son. And so this is probably around Thanksgiving time of the first few months of our marriage still. And I'm like, all right, here we go. At the time, my dad owned a business in Modesto. And so Ben was like, you know what? I think I'm just going to work for your dad for the rest of my life. And Ben was okay with that. He was like, because now something else that was part of
was your dad okay with that? Like, did your dad like the idea of bringing him in and thinking maybe we can get this kid on a great path?
They're like, yeah, my parents are like so open and forgiving and loving. They never told me what to do. They would give me advice, but they would support my decision.
Yeah.
So yeah, my dad was okay with that. And that was something that I saw in Ben when we first dated too, was like, he was a really hard worker. And so he was okay, like working manual labor for my dad. Like, he was going to do it. And we were 19 and that was going to be, I don't even know how much my dad paid him. I mean, it wasn't a lot. We lived with them, but he was okay.
It was salary. It was nice.
A few months after living in Modesto, I was like,
forced me to go.
I was like, hey, why don't we go down to the junior college, like, and see about you playing football? Because I have never seen him play. I'd only heard, right? Like, and watched on VHS, his athletic abilities. He's like, okay, we can go down to the junior college. And so this must have been like January, I'm thinking. We went down to the junior college. As soon as we walk into the football offices, the head coach is like, and again, at this time, we didn't mention to say this, but Ben carried his dad's last name. Ben's last name was Allison. And so Ben Allison was his name. And that was now my name, Christine Allison. So we walk into this football office and the head coach looks at Ben and he says, are you Ben Allison? And Ben says, yeah. He goes, we've been waiting for you. And
oh,
Ben
wow.
was like, what? He's like, your coaches called us, you know, a few months ago and said that you would move to Modesto. We were hoping you were going to come out here and, you know, come play football for us at the junior college. And that,
so
was,
that
like
was Coach Mack and all the coaches paving the way for me, like a tender mercy again, like, telling him, hey, look out for this guy.
Opening that door.
Yeah. So Ben registered for the junior college, and I guess working for my dad for the rest of his life was not going to be the path. And so he went into the junior college. My brother actually happened to be graduating that same year, and so they both played for the junior college together in the year of 01. Our son was born during this time.
She got to watch me. I broke a lot of the school records there for receiving at tight end. I became an All-American, junior college All-American, and I was going to commit and go to USC because USC wanted me to go and play for their program. This is the time when UFC was the national champions.
It
was awesome for me. I would have played with Reggie Bush. So I don't know if you guys know these guys. Reggie Bush, Lindell, all these guys that were Heismans. So Matt Leiner was the quarterback, so he would have got the ball.
Where did you end
up? That's right, we didn't. So during this time, Ben is obviously going, we had a baby, Ben is attending the junior college, and he's also trying to, like, find himself. And for us, we found spirituality, religion, for us was what's going to, you know, help some guidelines for our marriage. And so we ended up being sealed in the Oakland Temple, and that was, like, a big goal for both of us. Ben's grandfather was able to be there, so that was really important for him. So all these great things are happening. And then, obviously, he's being recruited by big schools out of the junior college. And Coach Matt calls Ben in Modesto and says, "Hey, Ben, we're recruiting you again. We want to come and visit you." And I'm looking at Ben like, this isn't happening, Ben. Like, I'm not moving back to Utah. I don't like the whole state of Utah now, all because of my bad experience there with what happened before.
Well, yeah, I mean, understandable.
He got shot and you were pregnant and then he goes missing. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, right?
Yeah. So I'm like, no way. Like, he can come. But in my mind, there was like 100% said no.
Okay. So we've kind of gotten the first 20 years of your life, which feels a lot longer than 20 years and a whole lot going on. We're eager to learn what adulthood brings, what the college world brings. We know you make it to the NFL and beyond. We know you're still here at 41. This is going to be a great two-part episode. We cannot wait to hear what happens next. So we invite all of our listeners to join in next week. We're grateful that you're here with us each week. Find us, like us on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a like, a share, a rating, and a review. That helps us get the stories out there. As always, if you're listening and you think, hey, I have a story to share, we would love to hear it and share that story. Find us on social media at Relentlessly Resilient Podcast or email us at rrpodcast@ksl.com.
And we'd like to give a special thanks to our amazing producer, Kellyanne Halverson. And a reminder, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives.
Can't wait till next week, everybody.
Bye.
Stay tuned.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are. And this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.